Welcome to the YYY Show, a comedy podcast about search histories, life, and
the wonders of science. I'm Jing'an.
And I'm Eliza. And in this podcast, we are going to talk about interesting things that we search for on the internet this week.
But first, we need to make a small disclaimer. This is a comedy podcast, and we do our best to research the things that we find.
If there's anything that's factually inaccurate, please send us your corrections through our social media channels. You can find us at YYY Show on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Okay, before we start the show, I have a note to add.
Okay.
About a search term in our previous episode.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's about the volcano snails.
Oh my gosh, the very metal snail, I love it.
Yes. So you remember we were saying that it was like a fire-type Pokemon?
Yes. Oh my god, is there an actual Pokemon that is named after this snail?
There is a fire/rock type Pokemon called Magcargo. It's fire
oh
and rock.
Oh my gosh,
type.
It looks exactly like the volcano snail.
Right?
Yeah.
And it's not metal type.
Yeah.
It's because it is a Gen 2 Pokemon.
Oh.
The metal type haven't come out yet.
Oh.
Yeah. Then it made me wonder, right? If it's a Gen 2 Pokemon, is it the volcano snail inspired the Pokemon?
Probably.
Yeah, I did a bit of searching, right, and found out that this Gen 2 debuted in 1999 in Japan and in 2000 in English.
Mm-hmm.
And the volcano snails, they were only discovered in 2001.
What?
Mm-hmm. That means the Pokemon actually predates our discovery of the volcano snail.
What? That's so cool.
Yes, this Pokemon existed first before we discovered them.
Okay, yes, there is a glitch in the universe. We are thinking of the same things. We are the hive mind. Okay, anyway.
Okay, so let's start the show. Jing'an, what is your search term of the week?
My search term is... Is moonlight made of UV rays?
Made of UV rays? Technically, it's not made, right? Made up of...
Yeah. As in, inside got UV ray or not?
Okay,
it has to do with this lotion that I added to my skincare routine recently.
Mm-hmm.
Then it says that it becomes ineffective when in contact with UV rays or radiation, so you should use it at night.
Oh.
Yeah, so then I was thinking like at night there's moonlight. Then?
But moonlight is reflected sunlight, ma.
Yes, so... So is moonlight, does moonlight contain UV rays?
Yeah.
Which for me, the answer is like quite definitely yes lah. I just want to know like how much. Because moonlight is reflected sunlight.
Yes. But when it's reflected, some of the wavelength will not be reflected
fully
to us. So it's not 100% of whatever we get in the daytime.
Mm. So how much less? Like that's the key here, the key question.
How much less? I think... 50% less.
50%? Okay.
Like half.
Half, okay.
Because it's still around, it's still in the air, what? Not man? Isn't UV everywhere?
Yeah, but as in like from the moonlight.
Yeah.
When the sun is directly shining on you, the UV ray is very strong.
Very strong,
directly
but it bounces off the moon like a mirror then shine on you, right? How much, right?
Yes.
Some.
Okay. Good answer.
50%, less than 50%.
Okay.
It depends on how big the moon is. If it's a full moon, then a lot. If it's a skinny moon, the crescent moon, then very little.
Yes, that's true. That's correct. Okay, so yes, you are mostly correct. The moon reflects sunlight, that's why it's so bright.
Yes.
Especially when it's a full moon.
Yes.
The moon is like so bright that it's like a light in the sky, right?
It's
lighting up the entire
sky. That's very big
floor.
One, oh.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So, definitely, moonlight is just sunlight reaching us later.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? And even at the moon's very brightest.
Yes.
Very, very extremely bright, like super moon, that kind of level.
Yes.
It is only 1 upon 380,000 as bright as the sun.
Wow. That's why we can look at it with our eyes.
Yes.
And not get sunburned, okay?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
So, it is actually very little. It's like way... Less than half.
Yeah, it's way less than half. Okay. Yeah.
So, and of course, it emits a correspondingly tiny amount of UV radiation.
So, 1 upon 380,000. Wow.
Yes, this is because the moon is not a great reflector. It looks bright and white at night because it is against the very dark expanse of space.
Oh, yes.
Right?
Because it's not shiny, right?
It's not shiny. It's made of rock and it's very grey. The sun is just really extremely bright. That's why it looks, the moon look very, 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 very bright. That's all.
Oh.
Okay. So while I was reading the articles about moonlight, right, I came across another term.
Mm-hmm.
It's earth-like or earth-shine.
So nice. Shine.
Such a pretty term.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so guess what it is and when we see it. We actually see it quite often.
We see it?
Yeah.
Earth-shine? When it's afternoon, then you drive on the road, then the road like emit some heat wave. Then there is earth shine.
No.
Okay, fine.
I mean, technically, we are always seeing it because we are always seeing the light reflected from the sun off the earth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but like, we see it reflected elsewhere as well.
We see it reflected elsewhere? Yeah. Like what? In the clouds?
Yeah, not really.
So the sun shine onto the earth bounce the light
onto
the clouds, then the clouds bounce back the light to us. Then it's like, wow, the clouds are white. Like that.
No.
Oh, okay.
I mean,
fine.
Yes, technically yes, but like, that's not what we are looking for here.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So earth shine is actually the reflection of sunlight from the earth's surface, normally onto the moon. Because you know, sometimes when you look at the crescent moon, right, you can see like the grey part of it, like the entire moon.
Mm-hmm.
Like the, you know, the moon is round, right?
Mm.
But when you see the crescent, it's because it is only like that part of it that's lit by the sunlight.
Mm.
So the rest of it is just not as lit.
Mm.
No, sunlight is reflected on earth onto the moon. That's why you can see a bit grey on the other side.
Like the shadow, open inverted comma shadow.
The dark side of the moon.
The earth, open inverted comma shadow.
Yeah.
On the moon. But it's not really the shadow.
It's not, not really shadow. Like it's the reflection.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because if it was completely no light, right, then you would just not see.
Mm.
Right? But then you can see a little bit of the outline of the moon.
Mm.
So that's a little bit of the sunlight that's reflected from Earth.
Oh.
Yeah, a bit grey like that. So if you were standing on the dark part of the moon, right, you'll be able to see the Earth being very bright in the sky.
Mm.
Almost like it's the moon. But I think most likely you'll be able to see it much bigger than the moon.
And it's also why when the astronauts, when they're in the spacecraft, then when they look back at Earth, Earth is not in the dark.
Nope.
Like we can see the colours of Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the
sun.
And
it's normally brighter because it's reflected.
Yeah, so there's Earth shine.
Yes. That's precisely it.
Okay.
It's also the same term used to describe the light that the astronauts see when they look at the Earth from the spaceship. Yeah.
That's why it's not one black mass. We can actually see colours, ma.
Mm.
Oh, so smart. Okay.
Yes. Okay, that's all. I just found these very interesting terms.
Mm.
So Eliza, what is your search term of the week?
My search term is... How do F1 drivers pee when they are racing?
Okay.
Yeah, I was thinking about this because I was catching up on the F1 Drive to Survive series on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I was wondering whether they have a pee collection system like the astronauts.
Mm.
Yeah, so what would happen if this system leaked? Remember we had an episode?
Yes.
Where our search term was about Buzz Aldrin's sloshy boot. You know when he go and step on the moon, then the thing leaked, right? Then he got a sloshy boot.
Yeah.
One small sloshy step for man. One giant leak for mankind.
No.
You remember this search term or not?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Then I was thinking whether the F1 car also got this system.
I remember quite distinctly searching for this before.
Huh? You actually searched for it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because quite a lot of people are curious about this topic.
Uh-huh.
Because the F1 races normally last quite long.
Yeah, it's then, about 1+ hour, 2 hours.
Yeah, and they need to stay hydrated as well.
Yeah.
So they need to pee
Yeah.
inside if they need to.
Then how? What's the answer?
I cannot really remember.
Huh?
Yeah.
You searched it, then you can't remember the
answer. Something like, they just let it out, lol, or like this, like part of the sweat.
Part or like
there's
of the
a
sweat.
There's a little compartment or something.
Like a pocket to pee in.
Yeah. Like to me, the more like overwhelming and shocking part is that they actually pee while they race.
Okay, please. Please enlighten you. Okay, so the answer is yes. If they really need to pee, right, they will just pee in the suit.
Mm.
Yeah, because there's too much money invested in the race for them to
stop for the bathroom.
Mm. Yeah.
Yep.
And, you know, they cannot really pee into a bottle while they are driving.
Yeah, correct.
So their best option is to simply pee in the suit.
Yeah.
Which leads us to...
Okay.
The peeing during F1 races lightning round!
What on earth?
Okay, question one. Why can't they wear diapers?
Is it something to do with like there'll be rashes or like, you know, because if they keep wearing that, like it's, I don't know, doesn't fit well inside the car.
Quite good guesses. It's actually, you know, they can if they want to. Like nobody say, hey, you cannot wear it. I mean, private ma, up to you. I don't know you have to wear. But most of them, they choose not to wear it because they are already wearing a lot of protective gear.
Mm.
And it'll be very uncomfortable and also very hot. And actually the suits, right, it's already designed to allow them to relieve themselves during a race. So it's like quick dry.
Mm.
Yeah, and also cause they sweat a lot lah, like what you said.
Mm.
Okay, question two. How hot is it inside the cockpit of an F1 car?
How hot?
Mm.
40 degrees Celsius.
40 degrees is very close.
Oh.
It can reach up to 50 degrees Celsius.
That's not close at all. That's 10 degrees difference. Have you noticed the difference between 20 and 30?
Yes. Yes. Quite close. I think it is a good guess. It's like hotter than the desert. No, desert is about 40.
Okay.
Ish.
Okay.
Yeah, it's 50.
Okay.
Yeah, that's why they have to wear all the suit and everything.
Yes.
Yeah. That's also why we see F1 drivers always drinking something.
Oh, yeah. Because they need to stay hydrated.
Yes, they can actually lose between 4 to 6 kg of sweat in a race.
4 to 6 kg?
Yeah, yeah. A lot. Huh?
What? 4 to 6 kg?
Of sweat, yeah.
That seems
it's,
like insanely...
It's like going to sauna and just like wither down.
Insanely
up to la, up to la.
Okay.
Some less la. Okay. So the next question, right, is where is this heat coming from?
The engine la. Yeah. And also the wheels when it rub against the floor then...
Cause so fast,
friction,
right?
Yeah.
Yes. The car, the tires, the track, the sun, if it's a day race.
Yes.
The suit itself is quite hot because it is...
Fireproof.
Yes. Yep. The helmet, right? Because your head is in the helmet then.
Oh my god, yeah.
You sweat then cannot evaporate. The stress of like being in an intense situation.
Yes.
The fluctuations in G-force. Like it will slow down and fast forward and slow down. So there's a lot of muscle exertion, you know, to combat the G-force. And there's also this thing called dirty air.
Dirty air?
Yes. Okay. So do you want to guess? What is dirty air?
Dirty air is the, like for example, right, you know when racing that time, you have the opponent in front of you. Then they will release some like gross gas.
Yes.
Noxious fumes.
Yeah.
Then you are behind ma.
Yes.
You're trying to overtake ma.
Yes.
So then you breathe in the dirty air. Lo.
Yeah, correct.
Wow, really,
dirty air, correct. Dirty air is when a driver is driving behind another car in the vehicle's turbulence. Yeah, so all that hot air and dirty air, which is what you said, all the fumes and all that, is coming out of the car, right?
Mm.
Yeah, it will go into the wind channel of the car behind.
Yeah,
and it's much hotter than clean air.
Oh, interesting.
Mm. And then sometimes you will hear commentators saying something like, Bottas has clean air in front of him. Can he use it to his advantage and catch up with the car in front enough so that he can get into the DRS range?
Yes.
So when they say clean air, right, that's actually what they mean.
Mm.
I thought it meant that the coast is clear, then they can like fast forward, but it's not. Yeah.
I've never noticed that, but I've noticed the DRS range.
Mm.
Yep. It's when they can overtake the car.
Mm.
Yep.
Can just like power boost.
Yeah.
Use the mushroom.
Boost. Yeah. Nitro.
Okay, next question. If there is no peeing function in the F1 car, is there a drinking function?
Definitely yes, like you said.
How?
Some straw that is connected to their mouth or something.
How?
Like Yeah, then when they want, then they suck.
So they carry one backpack, is it?
It's connected to the engine inside.
Okay. You are actually very, very close.
Oh.
Yes, there is a drinking function, and it's actually a bag with drinking liquid inside the F1 car.
Mm.
I don't think it's near the engine.
Oh, not the engine, like, it's near the car. Inside
near
the car,
cockpit. Yeah, near the cockpit. And they can put any drink they want inside.
Oh.
So most of the time, right, it is a sugary drink to help replace minerals that the driver is losing through their sweat.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Then, I guess the Red Bull drivers drink Red Bull.
Oh yeah, huh?
Or maybe not.
Or maybe like a version of it.
Maybe.
Special F1 version. Maybe. I don't know. That fluid bag has a straw that goes to the driver's mouth, like is it?
Mm-hmm.
But then they don't just keep sucking on it. Like, no,
oh.
It's not. It is on the steering wheel, right? There's actually a drink button.
Oh, you can press.
Yeah, so they can just press that. It will just automatically just squirt it into their mouth.
Oh, that's so interesting.
Yeah. So, actually, I went to look at pictures of the steering wheel.
Mm-hmm.
Really got drink button.
Mm.
I never noticed it.
And also, their steering wheel is like super complicated. So many things to press.
Yeah, a lot of button one.
Yeah.
Okay, the last and final question.
Okay.
What about pooping?
Cannot poop.
Then how?
Just don't poop. Well, if you want to poop, then you poop lah.
In your suit lah.
Yeah lah.
Yeah. So, usually, right, the drivers will go poop before a race.
Yeah.
Because it makes sense to be lighter for the race.
Uh-huh.
And also because it's uncomfortable, lah, to get worry about whether I want to poop or not.
Yeah.
Then, during the race, right, they are only drinking liquids.
Mm.
So, it should be fine.
Mm. So, they really need to, like, watch their diet and, like, what they consume, and so they don't anyhow poop in the race.
Yeah.
If they don't want a dirty suit.
An accident.
Yep.
Is that why they will take out their suit halfway then like use the other half to cover their butt?
Oh yeah ho, maybe People who don't watch F1 will be like, what is going on?
Yeah,
right,
what's
now
going on? Okay, so anyway, that's the end of the peeing during F1 races lightning round.
A very, very unique lightning round. Good job.
Yes. Okay, before I end this search term, I found out that not all drivers pee during their races.
Okay.
Yeah. So Lewis Hamilton has said on numerous occasions that he has never peed during a race.
Oh.
Adding that he couldn't if he tried. Don't know if it's his nerves or it's just shy,
right?
Or what. Then he just cannot. Then others who have also said that they never go in their suits are Sebastian Vettel.
Okay.
Daniel Ricciardo.
Okay.
And Max Verstappen.
Okay.
On the flip side, right, there are drivers who have peed in their suits and are known for it. So it is a well-known rumor that Michael Schumacher pee almost during every race in his suit.
He don't care.
David Coulthard is another driver who has admitted to going in his suit.
Ah.
So yeah, it's a personal preference thing.
I see. Interesting.
Yeah. But the thing is, they sweat a lot, so.
Mm.
So it's just kind of all mixed together.
Yeah, that's why you can't really tell the difference.
Yes.
Yeah. Understand.
Okay, the end.
Doop, 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 doop. Okay, it is time for our special segment, Three Things to Google from a Friend. So Eliza, who is the contributor for this week?
Our contributor this week is CY.
Oh, CY, okay.
Okay, so she gave us three search terms. First one is Alexandria Genesis.
Alexandria Genesis, right?
Oh, it's Genesis. I thought it's a personal name, then I just read it as a Alexandria Genesis. Okay, Alexandria Genesis. You're right.
What is this?
Why you shout so loud?
Because it looks nonsense. Alexandria's Genesis is an internet myth about perfect human beings whose eyes turn purple during infancy.
Wow.
Yep, sounds fake.
Yeah, but what's so interesting about this myth? Rumors about this so-called rare genetic mutation have been circulating the internet since at least as far back as 2005. Wow, so long ah.
Okay, claims that people with this condition are born with purple eyes or have eyes that turn purple shortly after birth. They also have pale skin and well-proportioned bodies that don't gain weight. These perfect humans are supposedly able to live well over 100 years old and produce very little bodily waste.
Wow! They make perfect F1 drivers, man. Like, don't poop, don't pee, then they can just drive the car.
Oh my gosh. Okay, Alexandria's genesis is not a real medical condition.
Oh.
Okay, but there are several real-life conditions that can affect eye color.
Huh? So there are people with purple eyes?
Eye color, but don't know where it's purple.
Are there people with purple eyes? I just googled it and then they said, a person cannot be born with purple eyes on medical news today.
Yes.
However, many of Caucasian heritage initially have blue or grey eyes. This color may darken over time to become green, hazel, or brown. And most babies who are not Caucasian, like us, are born with brown eyes.
Oh, so it is a phenomenon that naturally occurs that newborn eye colors will change.
Like, over time, is
yes,
it?
Yes, over time, yeah.
Oh.
Because your eye color, right, is the color of the iris, which is the ring, the colorful ring around the pupil. And this iris color, right, depends on the presence of a protein called melanin. So this special cell, right, called melanocytes, it secretes melanin in your body whenever it's needed. So you have that in your eye. Then the melanocytes, right, are activated by light over an infant's first year of life. So at first when it's activated, it's like maybe blue or grey. Then it can change to hazel or green. Then after that to brown. Because blue or grey means low melanin. Then hazel or green is medium melanin. Then brown is high melanin. So yeah, it depends.
Okay.
Then of course there is a heterochromia, which is like
the eyes are different color.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, other symptoms of why the eyes are different color could be various eye diseases or eye conditions, like pigmentary glaucoma, tumors of the iris, Horner syndrome, this and that. I'm not going to read all the eye illness, eye conditions again. Once again. We have two eye episodes in a row.
So many eye conditions.
Yeah. Okay, it's not real, everybody. It's fake news, huh? Don't believe this Alexandria genesis.
It's like some kind of supremacy theory.
Like the people in Lemuria.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Elitism thing.
Okay, so her next search term is, who invented Wi-Fi?
Who invented Wi-Fi?
Who invented Wi-Fi?
It's this Hong Kong guy called Wong Wi-Fi.
Oh my goodness, that's so funny!
But why Wong? Just to make him Hong Kong.
Oh, Wi-Fi Wong. It sounds like a good Cantonese name though, Wi-Fi. I'm sure right, the person who invented Wi-Fi is from the military.
Huh? Why?
Huh? It's not a pun or anything, it's just practical users. Who would fund the development of Wi-Fi? Okay. I imagine that only the military would fund Wi-Fi.
Okay.
Like, you know, you want to activate the troops, then you can, everybody's connected together, they can activate at the same time. Before we start this search term.
Yes.
What does Wi-Fi stand for?
I was about to ask you the question. Okay, listeners, you can guess. I give you 5 seconds. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It is wireless fidelity.
I would not have known it.
What on earth?
You will know meh? I will know, no.
I mean,
I would think that it's like wireless function something.
I mean, because like, lo-fi stands for low fidelity. So I might have guessed it. But okay. Like, so hard to guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, I never really thought about it. So Wi-Fi and the internet is not the same thing, Gawei. Everybody.
Huh? Okay, yeah. Because the internet, you can access by LAN also, right?
Yes.
But Wi-Fi is just the wireless way to access the internet, right?
Yes, they are connected, but they are not the same thing.
Yes. I'm old enough to know. Okay. So remember the dial-up modem days.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
When we did not have Wi-Fi.
Yes. I wonder if people, like the younger people, whether they can imagine a world without Wi-Fi.
Oh my god, that takes so long. Everything took so long. Like, you have to be connected via a wire.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
To your device.
Yeah. And then it connects to the wall one.
Yes. Right? And last time when we have to, like, connect to the internet or something, right? Then the phone cannot be used.
Yes.
Yeah. then there'll be this dial-up sound. Like that one.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Okay, anyway. Who invented Wi-Fi? The inventor of Wi-Fi, Vic Hayes, has been called the father of Wi-Fi because he chaired the IEEE committee. IEEE committee.
Yes, but because there are several components that make up the Wi-Fi, so it's not really one single inventor. It's actually a group of people.
Yes.
That work towards this thing.
So this IEEE committee created the 802.11 standards.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah.
So I guess it is a standard at which everybody can broadcast on.
It's kind of like radio. Wi-Fi is like radio. The way that it's broadcasted. The signal. Yes. Yeah.
So yeah, it's not one person. It's a bunch of people working together. So interestingly, right, there is this lady who is part of this Wi-Fi development.
Okay.
And the interesting thing about her is that she is a Hollywood actress in the 1940s.
Her name is Hedy Lamarr.
Yeah, and she filed the patent for frequency hopping technology that became the precursor to secure Wi-Fi, GPS, and Bluetooth.
She said that her scientific triumph was intended for the US Navy during the Second World War.
Mm-hmm.
So you were right that, yeah, the military would want to use this thing.
Oh. So she actually filed it with a co-inventor. His name is George Antheil, and it was supposed to allow the radio communications to hop from one frequency to another in a secure way so that the air-like torpedoes cannot be detected by the Nazis.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Mm. By the way, the friend, right, is a composer.
Oh, wow.
So who say creative people cannot do
science? Huh? Oh, wow. This is so cool. So they played a part in it.
Yeah.
Mm.
Then she said something very badass. She said, "I don't have to work on ideas. They come naturally." Okay, lor.
Clap, clap for her. You know, as I dig through this thing, right, more and more names come out. Like, there's one Dr. John O. Sullivan, an Australian engineer who is credited with leading the team of inventors who developed Wi-Fi technology. Yeah. So I guess there's actually a lot of teams working separately on this, trying to develop this thing and trying to make it worldwide.
Yeah. I mean, oftentimes, discoveries or inventions are not really by one person only. Yeah, it's normally because this person like published the findings or like, you know, is heavily associated with. Yeah, that's why he or she is credited as the inventor. So actually, you know, humanity is like everybody slowly putting one brick at a time to build like a house or a foundation to like further the progress of science. So actually, everybody is working towards like making more discoveries.
Yes.
Humanist.
Yes, very good. Applaud humanist. Okay, so CY's next search term is it possible to make a cake using an air fryer?
I think can.
But if you just fry the dough, then the dough not crispy, man.
No, you mistake the air fryer.
Oh, yes. Because the air fryer is like a convection.
It's almost like an oven.
Yeah, it's like an oven, right?
Yes.
But it's just shaped like a fryer, right?
Yeah, correct.
Ah, I want to see how it looks like. Like a cake made with an air fryer.
I think actually a lot of people make cake with air fryer. Can you bake a cake in an air fryer? Yes. It is super simple to do.
And it is perfect if you don't have a traditional oven or if you just don't want to turn that oven on. What? Oh my goodness. So cool ah. Okay. Then what? Can you put the tin meh? Inside meh?
Yeah, I see pictures. There are multiple pictures of different flavors of cakes that can be cooked in an air fryer.
Can you use a normal cake tin in an air fryer? Apparently, some of the air fryers come with cake pans. What? It is so cool.
Yeah. I'm seeing the pictures.
So there's so many recipes there. There's like air fryer lemon cake, air fried butter cake, air fryer sponge cake, air fryer banana cake,
cookie cake.
So whatever you can imagine, cake. You can make it
Okay, now I have another question.
Yes.
Is air frying better than baking?
Oh no, no, there's an answer. And it's on this Channel News Asia article. It's about this thing called acrylamide.
Okay.
Apparently, when you deep fry a thing, mm-hmm. versus when you air fry the thing.
Yes.
The air fry has less cholesterol.
Okay, okay.
But when you air fry it, there is an increase in acrylamide.
Okay.
Yeah, and then they actually tested it. This Channel News Asia documentary tested it.
I think it's because of the temperature, right?
Correct. Because this acrylamide, right, is a chemical that forms when certain types of starchy food, like potatoes or bread, are cooked at high temperatures.
Oh.
Yeah, so the temperature is too high, then they cook it, right, and cook it so fast, right, that it produces this chemical.
Then can you put the temperature lower?
Yeah, the deep fried potato contain less than 10 units, okay, of this acrylamide. Then the air fried one contains 1,400 units of this acrylamide. So okay. It's like 100 times more.
Oh, oh.
It raises some concern. Lah.
Mm, mm,
yeah,
mm.
And the WHO has described that, hey, this acrylamide is a health concern.
Because it causes cancer.
Yeah. Okay. So there needs to be more long-term studies. Haven't studied this thing properly yet.
It's too much, lah, correct.
It's way too hot. Yeah, that.
Way too hot in a very small amount of space for the food.
Yeah.
You cannot take it.
Then it became this cancerous chemical.
Became poison.
Yeah. Okay, that's the answer. Okay, now we know. Learn something new.
Okay. Do, 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 do.
Okay, so that's the end of our special segment. So, Jian, what is your second search term?
Okay, my second search term is... Does hot water freeze faster than cold water?
Wow, this one what physics class ?
Yeah, physics run.
Wow, this one I really don't know eh.
Cause I came across this on education channel recently. Then like, I was kind of like brought back to my secondary school days. There was this time when I had the devastation of realizing I forgot to put the drinks in the fridge. Then the ice in the freezer also ran out already. Then I want to drink a cold drink. Then like, I want the ice to freeze faster. You know, you got this
yes.
feeling before.
Yes.
So
what's the answer?
Yeah, what do you think? Is it yes or no?
I mean, the way you ask it, the answer is yes lah. But do I know how it works? How does it work?
Okay, first of all,
uh-huh.
Do you know that this was considered common knowledge by Aristotle?
What? Common knowledge?
Yeah, from all the way from Aristotle, it's a little nugget of information that's passed down since ancient times. And then he wrote that the...
How come they got fridge? Hang on, how come they got fridge? How come they got ice?
What happens in winter? Yeah, what happens to the temperature in winter?
It drops off, it becomes cold.
It becomes minus below freezing, right?
Where is he? He in Siberia or what?
He's Greek.
Greek so cold meh?
I mean, he must have seen
people. Okay, fine. He must have seen people who live in a cold place and then they realize that their hot things freeze faster than their regular things.
Correct.
Okay.
And they use it that way.
Okay.
Yes. So water that's previously warm cools sooner, hence it freezes more quickly. That's exactly what I said.
Why?
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. The answer is that it does in some conditions.
Huh? Okay.
Mm. Yeah.
Tell me why. I want to know why.
Okay. So this observation, right, is called the PEMBA effect. There's a M before PEMBA. So it's named after this Tanzanian schoolboy. His uh-huh. full name is Ernesto Bartolomeo Pemba.
Uh-huh.
So why is this very science thing named after a schoolboy?
Yeah, why?
Is he a genius?
Yeah.
Why?
Because I know. Because the father is the one who discovered it. Then the father is like, oh, I love my son so much.
Tribute to my son.
Tribute like the son died. No lah, more like, I want our name to live forever.
Okay.
No ah.
No. Okay, it's because of his story and how he discovered it, and the story became very popularized.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the story is, he was in secondary school, then he wanted to make ice cream to earn pocket money, but he don't have enough time.
Mm.
So he skipped the cooling phase of the milk mixture, and then he immediately chucked it inside the freezer. But his milk mixture froze faster than his classmates. Then he was like, So he raised it up with a visiting British diplomat and academic, and his name is Dennis Osborne.
Hang on. So he skipped the cooling phase. That means it came out straight from the cow, is it? No la, you like, when you make the milk mixture, that time it's still hot, right?
Yeah. No, the milk mixture, why is it hot? Is it coming out directly from the cow, that's why it's hot?
No la, like, you want to like melt from the butter or whatever thing you want to put inside the ice cream la.
Ice cream got butter one.
I don't know la, whatever. Whatever other thing they put inside the ice cream, I don't know how they make their ice cream there, okay?
Okay, they churn it, okay? Yeah, maybe it gets warm when you churn it. Okay, fine, they put sugar and...
No, I assume that it's actually hot what, before it, like, put inside the freezer.
Oh.
Yeah.
I thought he just took it straight from the cow and put it in the fridge.
No, it's hot.
Okay.
For sure it's hot.
Okay.
Yeah. Maybe like they want to melt the chocolate or something. Like,
yeah,
know.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, okay. It might not be boiling, but it's hot.
Yeah, okay.
Okay? So anyway, his thing froze faster lah.
Yeah, then he asked the diplomat.
Yeah, his name is Dennis Osborne, the diplomat.
Mm.
Then together, they observe this thing. Then he go this other school already, some wildlife school. Then after that, they co-author a paper on this phenomenon.
Okay.
Like what a cute story, right?
Yeah.
So, like so they sweet. Make friends.
Yeah, sweet. Cross-cultural discoveries.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. Anyway, back to the science. This particular issue is actually a bit controversial in the science world because it's not really definitively proven. And sometimes it happens and sometimes it doesn't. But It definitely happens. Like sometimes.
Okay. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So the idea is that the hotter the water is, the faster it will cool down.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so why? Any guesses?
Because the hot water, when it's hot, I learned in school that water is hot because it's vibrating faster.
Yeah.
So when it's vibrating faster, then you say, I bestow you coolness. Then it emits the heat from itself faster. Because they are arranging themselves and they are like struggling with themselves.
So like there's some escape, is it?
There is some energy passing faster. Faster energy passing.
But you want it to be slower, man, because you want the thing to not move, man.
Maybe when they are vibrating, they are spinning. So they are a round thing, right? Then they spin. Then they are all their surface areas get in contact with the cooler thing more.
That's a quite interesting hypothesis.
Okay. Can I be scientist already?
Okay, later I say the answer, then you see whether you feel that it's similar or not.
Okay.
Okay. So, the first one is evaporation.
Uh-huh.
Because in an open space, let's say it's like outdoors in the winter, then you take out like one boiling thing and one like a lukewarm thing, then the boiling thing will evaporate, ma.
Oh, yeah, ho.
Yeah. Mm. So, there's less water to freeze, so it takes less time.
Okay, makes sense.
So that is quite a
sensible argument.
Like one of the standard answers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But the evaporation doesn't always happen, especially when you use closed containers. Because the thing will go up, then there's this like...
Yeah, it'll condense and it'll come down. Yeah,
correct. So there's another theory.
Mm.
Is that because of convection.
Mm.
So like, you know, when you pour boiling water, right? There's this steam that comes up. So the hot water is escaping in a sense.
Yes.
Because it's evaporating through the top. So the water at the top is actually the hottest.
Mm.
And the water at the bottom is the coldest.
Mm.
Right? So this creates a convection current.
Mm-hmm.
And that accelerates the cooling process.
Oh, okay.
That's the theory.
We learned the convection before in school.
Yes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So the temperature of the hotter water drops at a faster rate than the cooler water.
Mm.
Yeah. But there's a lot of scientists that argue that no, this doesn't actually happen. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not fast enough.
Mm.
Yeah. So anyway, up to you. Maybe you can try this as an experiment. Mm. And also, right, if it's the milk mixture, right, maybe there's other things in the water, like impurities, to make it freeze faster.
Mm,
yeah,
because they have lower melting point. Because they have lower freezing points.
And also, like, maybe if he added salt or something,
then
it will freeze faster.
Mm. Mm. Okay, very science.
Today very science.
It's a science class.
Okay, Eliza, what is your second search term of the week?
My search term is onfin. What is my me?
Sounds very familiar. You continue saying.
I want to ask you to guess what it is. On film.
I think I just read about it. I can't remember, oh my goodness.
Today is a day of... You cannot remember what you read.
Okay, please, can you start? Because I'm just like drawing
on
a blank.
On film.
I didn't have a good night's sleep.
What is on film?
On film is...
Three guess, quick.
Orpheus son.
Wrong.
One more. Orpheum is something that I just learned about.
Is it a food?
No.
Is it a place?
No.
Is it a human?
Maybe. Maybe a person's name.
Is it a thing?
Maybe.
Okay. She's just like hazarding guesses. Okay. Orpheum, yes, is actually a boy.
Yes, Orpheum is a boy's name.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Okay, continue.
He is a medieval Russian child whose homework and doodles were found in 1951.
Yes, yes, yes. Oh my gosh.
In Novgorod, present-day Russia.
Yes, yes, yes. I just saw this.
You saw it?
Yeah, I saw it.
On TikTok, right?
Yes, on TikTok.
You know why I saw it? Because I liked it and I saved it.
Oh.
Then I pushed it to you because we are friends.
Sinister.
Yeah. Okay, so his drawings were found to be more than 700 years old.
Yes, it's his doodles in his school time. He's learning the alphabets or something like that. Yeah.
Which meant that he lived in the 13th century, making them the oldest confirmed children's drawings in the world.
Yes, and when you actually see the drawings, right, which I assume that we will post on our social media, it looks like a modern child's drawing. Yeah, you wouldn't feel that it's very long ago, or it's like a different era of child.
Yes, a different like a era of child. Yeah, like, it just looks like a doodle from a kid, lah.
Yeah, right? It's the same, you know, like, you know, the stick figure.
Yeah, stick figure.
With the smiley face.
Smiley face. Yeah. And then the hands is like rakes at it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yes. So it gives us a glimpse of medieval life in that area.
Mm.
So he was 7 years old at the time. And that place is actually between current day northern Russia and Finland.
Mm.
Yeah. And he was a student there. And then back then, Russia was not a unified country,
mm-hmm,
but an alliance of different kingdoms and republics. And this Novgorod is one of them.
I see.
Mm. And then Novgorod, very interestingly, I went to dig more about this because TikTok video will be short. So I wanted to know more about, how come this kid can draw on things?
Yes.
It's like, because a lot of medieval kids don't get a chance to go
learn
to school, right?
Yes.
Mm. Yeah. So why? This one not covered in TikTok, you won't know. Why?
And something like the girls and boys, they both go to school and they have quite good linguistic abilities.
Why?
It's inside the TikTok.
Why?
I don't know.
She only knows what she's on TikTok. Because Novgorod was relatively wealthy compared to other Russian kingdoms.
I see, I see.
Because they were dominant in the fur trade.
Oh.
Yeah, so they were pretty well-to-do.
Mm.
So many of them could afford to send their children to school.
Mm.
Yeah. So scholars believe that Novgorod Republic had an unusually high level of literacy for that period of time.
Mm.
And then this literacy rate was very, very high through different classes, like whatever occupation or whatever class that the parents belong to.
Yes.
It was just as high. And among both sexes, so both males and females got the opportunity to go to school.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Where did he draw his stuff?
Was it on paper?
No. I thought it was on paper also because the pictures like seem like it's like black ink on paper,
black
right?
Black ink on like some brown paper. Maybe like parchment or something.
Yeah, I thought it was parchment also, but it's not parchment.
Oh.
I went to Google also, like, is it parchment that he was drawing on? No. It was birch bark.
Oh.
So the city, right, is surrounded by birch forests.
Oh.
Yeah, then the locals have been using the bark of those birch trees,
mm-hmm,
for centuries to write stuff.
Mm.
So it comes off one piece on piece on, like irregular shapes, but it's flat, thin, thin one. And it's a bit soft, the surface, so it's easy to scratch.
So is it scratched on or is it written?
Yeah. So he actually, like, they don't have ink to write, so they actually scratch the alphabets and scratch the doodles in. So interesting,
that's funny.
Yeah.
It's like pretend to be writing notes and draw this nonsense.
Scratch, scratch, scratch. So what was he studying and what did he doodle, right? Like just now you said, so his homework is, most of them are reading and writing skills.
Yes.
So they had to copy alphabets and practice writing their Cyrillic syllables onto the birch
paper
bark. Yeah, birch bark. And the things he is actually copying, right, is actually biblical phrases.
Oh, okay.
Mm. Mm-hmm. So that's how they learn language in the schools.
Oh, okay, okay. Mm. That's interesting.
Yeah, and then his homework, right, is usually accompanied with drawings of himself and his friends.
Yes.
Yeah. And he also like to draw himself fighting things.
Mm-hmm.
And also imaginary.
Breathing fire. Huh? Got breathing fire also.
Yeah, yeah. And imaginary battles between like things, like this thing fight that thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think his most famous work is drawing himself as a monster with the fire coming out of his mouth.
Yes.
And with the inscription, "I am a wild beast." Yeah, we're going to put all these doodles.
Such a cute thing.
We're going to put some of these doodles on.
Yeah, he draw himself and his friends also very cute.
Yeah, very cute. Yeah, lor. So there are many, many, many more of his doodles lah. Cannot like possibly present everything.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, so you can just Google Onfim, O-N-F-I-M, mm-hmm. to see his drawings.
I don't think Onfim would have expected people 600 or 700 years
I think it was 800 already.
800 years later.
Yeah.
To see his drawings and laugh at them and stuff, then he say that I am a wild beast.
Yeah. I'm a wild beast. You know, children back then and children now not very different, leh. The way we approach learning is like the same.
The same. Yep.
Still don't pay attention. Still draw in the books. Still fantasize about battles and beasts. Yeah.
It's very normal.
Yep.
Alright, we've reached the almost end of our podcast and now it is time for One Thing to Recommend. My recommendation for this week is physical books and more specifically hardcover books.
Okay,
it's very different from reading from your phone or your tablet. Yeah, it might be more convenient to read on your phone or tablet, but like, you know, nothing really beats the experience of reading from book. Also, there's less distractions and it's easy on your eyes. And has the bonus of smelling nice. You
yes.
know the new book smell?
Yes, the smell of new books. Yes.
The smell
fresh
so good.
Off the press.
Yes. And I recently like really enjoy hardcover books. Like I just like it, you know. Feels good.
You know, when I was a kid, I don't like hardcover books because when I put it in my bag, I felt it was a bit heavy.
It's heavy, yeah.
Then there's always the dust jacket that I will like accidentally fold. Then I'll feel very bad that I folded it.
Yes.
Like at the edges, or I tore a little bit of it.
I normally remove it. I don't really like that, the dust jacket.
Yes, but yeah, I do like physical books too.
Yeah. And also the hardcover books, right? The typeface, like the way that it's arranged and the fonts and everything is all like more, it's better.
More better.
Yeah, more better.
Okay. Okay, my recommendation for this week is Marvel's animated series on Disney Plus called What If?
What If?
Yeah, essentially it ponders questions like, what if T'Challa became Star-Lord? Or what if Ultron won? Yeah, so the art style reminds me of the cartoons I watched in the 80s and 90s. But the colors are much richer and the backgrounds are gorgeous. It's like so beautiful.
Like painterly.
And the storylines are quite fascinating lah, because it lets us imagine like, what if we didn't stick to the plot lines in the MCU.
Yes, indeed.
In the main MCU.
Okay, we've reached the end of this week's podcast. Thank you, Eliza, for making this podcast with me.
And thank you, Jing'an, for doing this podcast with me. If you have Googled anything interesting lately, you can drop us a DM or comment on any of our social media accounts and we'll search it up on the show.
You can also follow us on our Twitter, Instagram, or on our Facebook page where we post images of some of the things that we talked about today. You can also help share our show with your friends that might enjoy a comedy trivia podcast.
If you'd like to support us, you can head over to our Patreon page and give us a small contribution to help us keep the show running. And now we're off to record One More Thing, a Patreon-only podcast called
One More Thing.
So, see you there!
Okay, we've reached the end of this week's podcast. Thank you, Eliza, for making this podcast with me.
And thank you, Jing'an, for doing this podcast with me. Podcast. Why do I suddenly have a lisp?
You can also help share our show with your friends that might enjoy a com... You can also help share our show with your friends that might
ankle.
You can also help share our show... You can also...